Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Arizona Sports. Whoa. What just happened? Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kel Nelson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman, who definitely has a better working brain than I do right now. What was that?
I'm not sure about that.
I think that was my stand-up video brain that just went off.
Yeah, that might be it.
Hello there, Arizona
Something
Sports.
Misfired in there.
Something went on. Oh my gosh.
We're still rolling.
Did anyone get sued in the 30 seconds that I said that, or is everything good over there, pal?
I mean, likely.
Kevin, trying his best to be the lead editor of ArizonaSports.com, take care of his newborn child, and all of this stuff going on. Meanwhile, the Arizona Cardinals have lawsuits. The Arizona Coyotes have lawsuits. That is all within the last 2 days.
My child is a year old now, but it might as well. Be newborn.
When can I stop saying newborn?
Is it like a few weeks out? I'm not sure.
Oh, is that? Brother, you got to get on me. I don't know.
It's still new relative to me, so. But yeah, if we want to make a power rankings of pro sports owners in the Valley, good job, Matt Ishbia. You haven't done anything crazy in how long?
Killing
has it been? 2 months?
Killing it. Absolutely destroying it in a good way.
I mean, yeah.
Speaking of destroying it, the Phoenix Suns, they've won 6 games in a row. They beat... These are 3 games where we're hardly going to talk about them, honestly. They played the Denver Nuggets, who were sitting 4 of their 5 starters. Sorry. They had 4 starters out due to injuries that were...
quote-unquote injuries.
Serious. I'm mildly joking here. I do believe that there were injuries there, that they had things that were bothering them. And
maintenance stuff. Maintenance,
you know what's
stuff.
Great is having the 1 seed wrapped up pretty much already. So you can just choose to do that if you want to. And then that's what they chose to do. Then they go on they went up by 27 in that game in the mid-second quarter against Bruce Brown, Christian Brown, and the boys. And then Denver got to back to within 4 in the fourth quarter. And it got not hairy, but it was like, okay, if you guys do this for like 3 more possessions, it'll be a tie game now. But they got that done. Oklahoma City, they looked pretty great for most of that game. I think they were up 14 in the late third quarter, and then quickly OKC had it down to, I believe, 4 again in the early fourth quarter before they ran double drag over and over again, and it was curtains. The Spurs come in, who, Kevin, I don't know if you knew this heading into the season, they were supposed to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
They were missing their 2 leading scorers, a couple of other key players as well. The Suns were 19-point favorites in this game. If you're not a degenerate gambler like the majority of the population, it feels like now.
People we work with. Not us, though.
Just everyone I know, it seems.
We're
like
responsible men here.
My friends are degenerate gamblers. Shout out Sense Sports, if you remember that in high school. We were on Sense Sports. A lot of weird stuff going on there before I started covering things and stopped gambling. But man, they were 19-point favorites. That's a lot. That's a lot. And
how many players could you name? If
you know one, say that name.
Which one?
You got it.
Who are you?
Big boy
about?
Out of Seton Hall. Remember?
Oh.
Say the name.
Mamukelashvili.
You got it. Sandro Mamukelashvili.
Kelashvili. I almost got it. I looked at it a few
long
times.
Long-time listeners.
To be fair.
Not even long-time listeners. Listeners within the past year when we were convinced that the Suns were going to do something in the draft. They ultimately did not. I did my deep dive on the draft because I had 3 more weeks of basketball stuff saved up in my head for a finals run and then used it on the draft instead. Sandro Mamukelashvili and the lads.
They're so good at that.
We're down 31. In the first half, cut it down to 9 in the third quarter. And it's the same things in these 3 games where it's just completely mentally disconnecting. It is bad turnovers, missing defensive assignments. And this is where I start saying this and you're thinking that this is a criticism. What I wrote in the recap last night is this is one of those things where you can decide how much you care about this happening lately. Now, it is the additional context I didn't get to in there is that this is coming off of that run where they lost 6 of 7 and all it was these little runs in the second half and that was it. So this has become a theme now for about 15-20 games here where giving up runs in the second half to either lose control of a game or just be out of the game entirely are happening. But how much do you care, Kevin? Because the other example I gave is, remember when the Suns were in the bottom third of defensive rating for the last like 30 games of the finals run year? And people were kind of worried, and we kind of talked about it, but then they just locked in and made the finals.
I'm not super worried about it. I'm worried about the instances where it's kind of the bench, I guess, more so. And that's hard, right? Because they're tinkering. It hasn't been consistent. But it has been the starters, too. Like, they've had some leads blown that were on some of those guys, and just, again, the focus issue. I'm trying to think, like, I don't have a good historical, like, oh, we saw this trend other than what you just brought up of they just got rid of it in the playoffs. It's human nature. You see the Nuggets have basically had I don't know if it's been a full month, but I feel like it was a month ago where Michael Malone was just like, he did the Michael Malone, I'm calling all my dudes out in the media on purpose thing. And they've kind of fixed it, but also, like, you get why they would, right? It's tough to win a bunch of games, and then you have that buffer. And for the Suns, like, I think it's a different reason, and the reason I think it's, if you have Kevin Durant on your team and you can go up 20 with, I call it relative ease, and you're getting in transition and just, you look like you've battered this young Spurs team down where they're, like, it's even effort things for a young team that shouldn't have that kind of problem. Then you're going to have slip ups when Pop gets on them and then they respond. So I think it's a lot of little things. I'm not super concerned about it, but to me, again, it's like, to your point, it happened over a losing stretch. It happened over a winning stretch. Is it going to happen over important stretches when, like, it's more of personnel issues, I think, because I think that's what's going to pop up more in the playoffs. And if you're doing it when there are personnel issues existing, matchup issues is what I'm getting at, then you're in big trouble.
You brought up Craig Popovich. Can I tell you what happened last night? I messaged you and was like, I'm going to ask Craig Popovich about. So I'm writing a story. It'll be live Friday. So probably be, it's shaping up to be one of my favorite things I've written this year. I don't know yet. It's in the development stages still. Unfortunately, didn't get the amount of quotes that I wanted to. I only got to ask Durant about it. And luckily, he's got the kind of superstar brain where he's been around so much media for so long that his brain doesn't go to, man, I don't care about Friday. Like, we play today and then we play on. Like, he was able to talk to me about playing against LeBron James on Friday, potentially. We'll see. The Suns play a back-to-back, and they already have the 4 seed clinched. We probably should have mentioned that earlier. They haven't played each other since 2018. It's a stretch of, I think, 11 games, 13 games? I can't remember the exact number, but they haven't played each other for a while. So I was going to ask Greg Popovich about Durant and Team USA, not LeBron, because he did not coach LeBron, and I knew that because I looked it up before asking him these questions, because I was nervous, because it's Greg Popovich. Yeah. And what happened? I asked one question. He did his thing where he says something quick and then looks away from you as if to, like, dismiss you. But then you stand your ground, say more things, and then you get a really great answer. And then I ask a follow-up and then I ask about LeBron. When I didn't mean to ask about LeBron. And then he's like, I didn't coach LeBron at Team USA. And then I awkwardly said, you're correct, I missed it. I'm sorry. And then I followed up again and got another really good answer. So yeah, that was the follow-up there, because I messaged you, I told you I'm gonna ask Pop a question. We'll see how this goes, because if you don't know for some reason, that can go a lot of different ways, but most of the time he gives very insightful, great answers. It's just, you got to be ready for the
retort,
the prickly edges,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it. Dude, I don't care. I got to be honest. I don't care about the second half stuff as much. Now that they're winning the games, I don't think that it really matters nearly as much. Do they know how to win together, I think, is a thing.
Yeah.
All of these guys have won so much individually that I think collectively it's less of the work now. And especially because the base of the team that has been here winning collectively together is still here. Like, Mikal and Cam are gone. But it's still Monty, Chris, Book, DA. They all know how to win together. Kevin comes in Okogie comes in. Someone mentioned something, Landry mentioned something today, and I hadn't thought of this. Like, yeah, this will be Okogie's first playoff go.
Yeah.
So that'll be something to watch for sure. But in terms of developments on the court, I think Chris Paul's continued to look pretty good. We sort of have hit on that a lot recently and don't really need to speak too much more on it. He finally got that 20-point game. I think it was 22 last night, 18 in the first half. Got a lot of catch-and-shoot threes. Even Al McCoy is getting on him to shoot more, I learned yesterday. Do you think that sitting campaign for Landry Shamet is a good idea? I don't know how I feel about this. Background context, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Campaign has been coming in first or second guy off the bench since Kevin Durant returned. Because we can't even talk about the rotations while Kevin Durant was out. Because once Kevin Durant comes in, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Cam has been the first guy off with Torrey. And then it has been TJ Warren. And then the ninth and tenth guys in have been the backup center. Biombo. It's pretty much been Biombo now. And then Terrence Ross has been the last guard. So none of those names were Landry Shamet. Landry Shamet was the first guy to check in yesterday. And campaign did not play in the game at all. He was coming off of a 9-minute game against OKC where I think he was 2-4 with 3 assists, but then he also had 5 fouls in 9 minutes. It was one of those types of campaign games. And then with a week to go in the regular season, Monty utilizes this look where it was obvious what happened. Like, as soon as they were starting to play, it was like, oh, this is a point book lineup now. And that's where you start to think about our conversations, Kevin, we had 2 months ago. And we're like, there's a lot of ball handling on this team now. You might not need campaign as much as you thought you did. And then this happens. What'd you think?
We'll see if it's a one game thing. I think it could be a one game. You get to run point a little bit just to get you in the groove, get your mind in that, slotted in that way. I don't, like, again, last postseason, he went to it, what, a few games into the playoffs, and it looked pretty good. It was fine. There are reasons where you have Book on the ball more, KD maybe on the ball more, obviously Chris Paul, that you don't need a backup point guard, but I'm still like, I feel like this is my, they need more ball handlers thing. For the last 3 years, they need downhill.
So you still feel that way? So in a way where, this is kind of like the question. And
is he that much better of a defender than campaign?
Yes. He's bigger.
He's bigger.
Size was the thing that he mentioned on defense, and switchability on defense is what he mentioned as well. I think Landry is a, if we're talking about on like the spectrum of average, below average, bad.
Yeah.
And then we go up to above average, good, fantastic, like up and up. I think he's somewhere between above average and good. Like I think that he's an above average defender in the league at the very least. I think he's good.
Here's the thing. I said when campaign, I think last podcast, two podcasts ago.
Cam's not bad either, to be clear.
Yeah.
He's below average.
So if this was a thing where it's campaign is good in a different way, where it's like he's pesky, he might not be physical and all that stuff, he might not bother you even with his length, but he's going to at least disrupt the guy bringing the ball up the court. So I think from that perspective, he's important. And if this was a move or one game where he's like, oh, I almost said a bad word, I might lose my spot in the playoff rotation, and that makes him play with that kind of intensity and makes him play with better pace or whatever Monty wants to get out of him more, I think that could have been what that was last night. So I don't like it. I think campaign just has something that no one else has with the downhill stuff, even though if it's still like, I don't know if he's going to make, he doesn't shoot great down when he gets into the floater range. He doesn't, maybe he's going to turn it over and be erratic, but I still think there's value to that. That wasn't a very good answer. Sorry, but interesting moment. Yeah.
Since next week, we're going to be previewing the first round matchup so much and hardly talking about the Suns themselves, more how they match up with the other team they're going to be playing. Let's flesh out the playoff rotation if we were Monty right now.
Oh.
Let's do it. Okay, so
not matchup based.
So the five, again, we're keeping in mind that Durant's going to play 40 to 42 minutes. Booker is going to play 40 to 42 minutes. Chris is going to, I think the Monty actually kindly used like the actual numbers that he was looking at getting guys to. Like he mentioned getting Chris more towards 36 instead of 32 for this part of the season, because it's the opposite. You think it's the end of the regular season and like wear down and you don't want guys to get worn out for the playoffs. But Monty thinks of it, and a lot of people honestly should think about it the other way, which is rhythm, conditioning, gearing it up.
And lots of these guys have not had the minutes toll on them.
Yeah, so, and DeAndre, he'll be somewhere between 30 to 40. It's hard as 45, honestly. Like, there'll be some, there might be a series where he plays like 44. I think he had one of those games where he played like 43 or 44.
If you want to think about it for baseball fans, like, in, as spring training goes, like, the starting pitchers ramp up. Like, they start one inning, then you go to three. You have pitch counts, and I think they're kind of viewing these weeks as that. I think just getting them in shape, because again, like, Chris looks like he's in probably best shape he's been in all year, and I think that's very calculated.
Yeah, Brendan Clean tweeted, it turns out that like the slow playing is how he phrased it, but however you want to phrase it, the way that they were handling his minutes and his usage on the ball early in the season, middle of the season, it has paid off, at least visually right now. It seems like it has. Okay, the rotation.
Yeah.
We have to, so that's the asterisk, the go-ahead. We have to make sure that people are cognizant of that. So when we're saying playing this guy, you got to think about this guy is probably going to play a maximum of 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Maximum. And it's very likely that they're going to play somewhere between 8 to 14, probably. Torrey Craig is the first wing off the bench, right?
It does not matter who you play, but he and Okogie just fit in. And Torrey's now playing the best stretch of basketball as a Sun. Interesting.
Turns out when he gets to play like the role that he was supposed to, which is off the bench, and like, he had to start for most of the year. And like,
he happens to be shooting
Torrey
really
is
well.
A
and
quality wing off the bench, but if you ask him to be a starter, that's asking more out of him. And Monty broke down how his role kind of changed. Backup center, let's go there next.
Oh.
Landale Hive, strong on Twitter. A lot of people want to see Landale in there. I understand why. I think Biz's defense is needed. And Landale is not, that's the Payne Shaman thing again. I don't think there's this tremendous jump between Biz on defense and Landale on defense. I think you run into the same problems with either of them.
Yeah.
Biz obviously is a shot blocker. I think that matters, and I'm going to be the opposite of what everyone normally is, which is, yeah, blocks do matter. Like, if you have a guy that blocks shots and one who protects the rim well, who blocks the shots, and one who protects the rim well, who doesn't block shots, I think that it matters that they block shots. Now, Landale, the offensive process is going to be a lot more fluid with him. You're going to be finding him in those deep seals, 6-foot hook shots where Biz is, and that's where you never know if it's going to go in or not. Biz's knockdown rate on those hook shots is not that great. Landale's is pretty good. Then he gets to be almost free throw shooting, which if you haven't looked at that this year, I think he's at 30% this year. Something really, really rough. But I think defensively, you get a lot out of him. Just the intangibles, the way he uses his hands, the way that he communicates, the way that he has experience there. I like the fact that he has continuity with Terrence Ross. Those guys played like 4 or 5 years together. Oh, yeah. I wrote about that on ArizonaSports.com a couple months ago. If you never saw it, check it out. That was one of my favorites from the year. I go Biombo.
1.4 blocks in 14.4 minutes a game. That's a lot.
So that's like 3.5 per 36. Man.
Some math like that.
Do you have Landale, Biz? What do you do? Depends on matchup, of course, but we're just saying on neutral ground right now.
I think Landale's offensive pluses aren't exactly worth it. Like, not enough.
Right.
I think he's more flawed than people will say. And like, as much as Biz like is confused and like just panics and decision making and all that stuff, like, there is something to be said for, oh, he can reach your shot if you're within like 5 feet anywhere in the paint. Like, that's,
if Dario and Frank are a,
and rim rolling, like, he's actually like, he's a better rim roller.
Yeah.
More gravity.
To your point, if Dario and Frank are an 8 out of 10 on the connector scale, Jock is a 6, 5, 6,
yeah.
And then Biz is like a 4 or 3, basically, and then you just have to,
I mean, the big problem with Landale is he never got his 3-point shot in gear, and that kind of changes the whole like shaping of that of
and
the defense.
It's
when you're
tough to get
connector.
Your 3-point shot in gear when you're in and out of the lineup all the time too.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing for him, but no, okay, that's 7. Who's next? Go ahead. I don't know. I know what my answer is, but I think it's there's six names still you could pick.
I think Terrence, as much as Terrence Ross was frustrating early, I think just guy, everyone's going to worry the crap about it. Like, it doesn't even matter if he's missing for a few minutes a game. But if he goes on a heater, then suddenly your game's blown open, and that's an easy one for Book.
To go back to our spectrum, below average, bad, horrible on defensive scale, it was horrible for the first 2 weeks.
Beat around
the bush. A guy learning how to switch in the NBA, not how, but just going from a team that pretty much never switched. Monty, I'd said this a couple episodes ago, but I'll bring it up again. Monty, they were watching the tape of Orlando ahead of playing Orlando. Like, yeah, they do not switch. Look at that. Like, it was just one of those things where they saw and they're like, okay, that makes a lot of sense as to why he's like struggling with switching. He didn't say it in that kind of way, but he was kind of
also all the terrible foul calls that just magically happened against that man just stopped happening when the entire team decided maybe we should be the ones drawing fouls. Weird how that happens. It
kind of does happen like that sometimes. It kind of do be like that. I think that he has gone from the horrible on the spectrum to somewhere below average and bad. I'm not here to say that he's been solid on defense now, but I think that he's been.
I watch and I'm not just like,
he cannot be on the floor. I said that a couple of times in the first 2-3 weeks. It's been good. And guess what? If you play him for... I've always had this philosophy. If you play these types of guys in a playoff series, they're going to have one game where they swing it. Now, is it going to be the Utah version, which was in that Utah game? I think that he scored, I want to say 7 points in like 2 minutes, and it was just like a little one. Or it was like Sacramento, where he scored 30 in the game and scored 20 whatever in 9 minutes. Some version of that, you're going to get that from them. You're just going to, especially on this team where they are going to be leaving him open. You just have no other choice when he's out there and who he's out there with. I agree. So that's 8 right now.
Gotta go guard next, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, campaign.
Yeah.
And that's, like, if Shamet was like Terrence Ross, where you don't have to worry about him getting up shots and at least scaring defenses, then I'd feel better.
Decisiveness. If Terrence is like a 10 out of 10 on decisiveness, then I don't even want to score Landry, unfortunately. And again, it sucks because he's a good defender, good shooter. He doesn't need to be on the ball as much more, which is fine. But I found in these minutes that he's been getting, he's still finding himself in situations where he has to be decisive and aggressive with the ball, and it's just not there.
As far as rotations go, okay, I'm trying to think how they do it. They've been...
So that's 9. And who's your point? Who's your point .5? So he said 9.5.
Probably Landry. Who else am I forgetting?
You got Damian Lee.
Yeah.
You got Ish.
Yeah.
You got Tony Buckets.
Oh, God.
I'm going to look something up.
I'm trying to think. I'm sorry. This is dead air. Is this bad podcast sound?
No, we're thinking. We're showing how much we care about the process. What would you guess Ish's 3-point percentages this year? What would you guess?
35?
34. Okay. How many attempts do you think?
Like per
just
game?
Total. Like how many has he taken this year? In 57 games, how many threes has he got up?
60?
161.
Jeez.
He has taken a lot of shots this year. He has gotten a pretty good sample size here to show what he is as a shooter. I think
there's
everyone,
some lineups where he's the dude, yeah.
Everyone watching will agree that when you watch the improvement for him as a shooter, it's there. And I truly do believe that he will be a good shooter in the league here at some point. I would say that of everyone on the team, if we were taking everyone on the team and ranking them by the overall caliber of defender they are, when prioritizing, like, we're going to switch everything tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the top 5 guys on the team? Ish is in the top 5. He is.
He needs to play.
That matters.
Clippers,
but
Lakers.
I think if you've got a Kogi and Craig already in your lineup.
But can you? I don't know if you need that many, though. And especially if
I'm saying... I'm saying the opposite. Like the guy they're leaving in the corner. They're leaving Ish. They're leaving him.
Yeah.
Can you play 3 of those guys?
Like at the same time, literally, or just in the rotation?
No, in a rotation.
I think so.
Okay. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Leaning no. Ishan Dish has been pretty good this year. He's been good with 1-2 dribble drive decisions. That's an edge over Shamet for him.
Yeah. I mean, if Warren's sitting in the corner, like, I don't know if he's in rhythm enough.
I have my answer.
Yeah.
Redundant with Terrence Ross, but I just got to go with the guy that I would trust the most. Damian Lee.
I don't understand why Damian Lee is not getting more minutes when you have... I mean, I know Shamet can run point, but if you want a shooter, again...
Well, it's just shooting with defense that gets picked on, even though he tries really hard to understand what's going on. That's him and Terrence Ross are nearly identical in that point, but Terrence is a much more flamethrower shooter, but I think Damian's a super smart player who makes heady plays all the time.
Remember, he was the game-winner guy in Game 1 of this season. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were 2 months into the year and talking about how much of a steal he was, and that kind of faded just because so many different guys have stepped up on this team leading to this discussion. Damian Lee's my guy. Who's your guy? Like, depending on the night, you might throw him in there, you might not.
I think I would go Ish.
We both are leaving Tony Buckets off. That is going to be...
I just don't know.
I don't know.
He's looked good.
I just got it. I really would have loved a full season of seeing it.
I think he has it if he can hit open jumpers. But even last night, there was a weird, I forgot what quarter it was, end of play where it was like corner hit. He was on the wing. It got swung to him. And for some reason, he just passed to Book. And Book had it like, it was a fine shot, but it was a little contested. And it's just like, why didn't you shoot that? That was weird. And I know that's like one play, but I just still don't know where he's at as far as being anything close to, like, you need to shoot if you're out here, if you get shots. You need to find yourself in this offense. I'm not even talking about the defense. I think he's not been worrisome lately.
He's just moving slower compared to how we saw him 3 years ago. And guess what? Like, serious, serious foot injuries will... unfortunately do that
years off
I think maybe by next year, like, he'll start to look like himself physically a little bit more, but me and you and a lot of people listening have seen Tony Buckets, TJ Warren play 250-300 NBA games at this point. Like, we know what it looks like when he moves on the floor, and it's just a step slower than we're used to, which a little bit of age, a little bit of, but a lot of the injury. And I think that if he was just the same speed he was before defensively, I would feel a little bit better about it. Because I agree with you on defense. He hasn't been a red flag. He's just been
like
passable.
Yeah.
Okay. That's where I land. We agree. And I agree. It's weird. There's been so much discussion about the rotation this year.
Yeah.
Compared to the last 2 years, where the rotation mattered a lot more 2 years ago than it does this year.
I'll ask you this. Do you feel good about, I guess, when you look overall collection of role players now compared to when they made the KD deal? Do you feel like it's more confident or less confident than like the night?
Who's a role player?
Everyone, not the big four.
So Mikal is included in the big four before the Durant trade.
I mean, like, right after...
Oh, you're saying...
Like the night
after
the trade.
How I feel 2 months later.
Yeah.
About the depth.
Yeah.
I feel the same.
Yeah.
Don't feel any better or worse. Ross has been more or less what I expected. I would say that... I think that I might have expected Ish to have, like, a...
bigger role.
Not a bigger role, but just a couple more... impactful games that went beyond... There was a zero-point game he had somewhere in there... a couple weeks ago where he was awesome.
Yeah.
But at some point that does have to lead to production. So that's kind of where I lean. I think backup center has been great for the most part. I know that it's going to have its limitations once we get in the playoffs, obviously. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I feel the same. Do you feel the same? I think
I feel with me there. Better, I think.
Okay.
Just because, like, Craig's gotten better. Akogi
That's probably the most important one to say.
He is not disappointed when he was like, oh, this guy needs to take Mikal's minutes, and he's been pretty good. Campaign has not played badly. And then, yeah, Terrence Ross has done Terrence Ross expected stuff. TJ Warren, as good as you could expect, considering how little he's played the last few years. Backup centers haven't really gone up or down for me. So, yeah, I mean, I think my blind spots are just seeing it over and over again against the same team when you have matchups that are different types. And that's why next week when we do this, will we know who they're playing? Probably.
Man said, I'm good at transitions, and look at that.
Oh,
look at him go.
I don't know when we're recording next. I don't know. You run my schedule here.
Matt Jackson over here. There's a wrestling reference that 27 people that listen to this podcast will understand.
I'm sorry. I'm sure it was very good. I'm sure it was very good.
Planet. I wrote a story on ArizonaSports.com looking at the four teams that could land number five. Folks, that is the Golden State Warriors, the LA Clippers, the LA Lakers, and the New Orleans Pelicans. And I looked at three categories. I did current form, which was looking, okay, since the trade deadline, since their rotations have been set, since they've gotten over whatever they had to get over in the first couple months of the season, any players sticking out right now, anyone catching form, fire, whatever you want to call it, defensive personnel, something I've talked about a bunch on here. Do you have the bodies to guard this team individually? You just need that. If you don't have that in one of these series, you're pretty cooked. Like Dallas, like I worry about external forces with this matchup and how it just seems like to be cursed for them, but they don't have the bodies. They would be cooked. And then third, continuity and experience, mainly focusing on continuity just because there's a big edge there to be had. But at the same time, you do have, like I said, Ayton, Booker, Paul, they've been together for a while with Monty. They've seen a lot already, but Durant is just here. Okogie, it'll be his first postseason. We'll see. I looked at all these teams, and the conclusion that I came to, and maybe it's because of the way I did the exercise, I don't really rank any of these four teams super highly over each other or lower than each other. I didn't look at any of these four teams and say, ooh, that's the team I would want to play if I was the Suns. Or, man, I would, if you could find a way to avoid them, I would avoid them. I didn't feel that way. And yes, including the Warriors, including the Clippers, including, I mean, whoever, like the Pelicans, I guess, if you feel poorly about them. But have you seen Brandon Ingram play in the last 3 weeks, man? Like, it's 37-8 right now. Like, yeah, he's carrying them as a superstar, like doing a superstar thing right now for 3 weeks. It's pretty remarkable. Like, that's become his team now. Like, it's even when Zion comes back, I think that's Brandon Ingram's team now. That's what's happening over there. The Lakers, Anthony Davis, if we were looking at current form right now of players in the Western Conference, I think that he's probably been the best player over the last 2 months in the West. Probably. I feel pretty confident in saying that, at least in the last like 6 weeks. I know Booker's played really, really, really well as well, but that's where he's at. Do you agree with me or disagree? Because I could see people going either way when they read it.
I disagree a little bit on the Clippers, and just from what we've seen this year standpoint, it's been 2 years since they were like that really good team that really pushed the Suns. But like,
what do you disagree on, to be clear?
Oh, they're the ones you want to play.
Okay, I had them fourth still. So I ranked them last, but you're saying that there's a big gap.
I think there's a relatively big gap because the other three teams, I think, have legitimate, like,
you could lose that series. You would be the favorites in those series, but there are.
I wouldn't be surprised if you lose to any of those. I would be surprised if they lost to the Clippers, but there's the asterisk about, like, if Paul George and Kawhi Leonard both play and look fine, then suddenly they're right there, right? So that's like a. That's an unknown. It doesn't sound good about Paul George unless you know an update.
Nope.
About like more optimism about him coming back and being ready right away for this upcoming first round.
It does not feel like the developments that we normally see for a guy being ready in a week and a half are happening right now. Then again, they could be keeping that hush hush. Then again, we had to deal with this when Kawhi was out. We had to deal with it when Zion was out. Like,
but like, who's in their rotation that like, Nick Batum, love the guy. He's carved out like the second like phase of his career.
Who is their third best player is what you're saying when they're fully healthy even?
I don't know.
They've had a weird season.
Zubac is like a really good player, but he's not like the third best dude who's going to be like, I will take over for Paul George not being here guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where you would have liked a little bit of that Reggie Jackson, but it obviously didn't work out there this year. Bones Highland is in the mix now. My friend, they've had a very strange season. When I was looking at current form, all this different kind of stuff, man, the volatility with them specifically really stood out, and is primarily why I was looking at them and ranking them a little bit lower. The stat that I had in the story was that in 2023, so once it turned January 1st, they are ninth in offensive rating. Pretty great. You're looking at me puzzled because you're like, wait a minute, aren't they tied for 20th in offensive rating right now? They are. They were 28th in offensive rating over the first 38 games they played of the year. 28th, the third worst in the league. Defensively, they're 14th in March after being in the bottom third for January and February. This team, is, as we have come to know it, is more about defense than offense. So them figuring it out on offense has been good, but their defense hasn't been there. And their defense had like an abysmal January, February, specifically with a losing version of what we were talking about with the Suns, where like they're just totally disorganized. They're just blowing all these assignments. And who is this team? Are they even going to make the play-in anymore? There was like a three-week stretch where
it's
the Clippers...
It's weird they're flipping it with Russ, too, in there. That's like the weirdest part of it. Like, competent, at least. I'm not saying complete flip, but like that team should not be bad at defense, how they're constructed, who their coach is.
No, not at all. Westbrook's been good. 15, 5, 8, and 4, the 4 being turnovers, but he's shooting 48% from the field. Efficiency has been a big problem for him. It seems like he's done the Houston Rockets transition from 4 years ago where his career started to decline, and then he was like, okay, I'll literally just shoot at the rim. That's it. That's all I'll do. If you're giving me the 15-footer or 3, I won't take it. He takes it every now and then. He's been fine. I would want to see them if I was the Suns for a couple of different reasons. One being him. There's your pigeon. The most obvious pigeon out of any four of these teams, it's him. The guy that they would pick on the most defensively. Westbrook, physical freak. ADD off the ball. I don't know what it is, but he just disconnects crazy. And then when he gets put in actions, it doesn't really go well for him. The continuity experience part is where I want to treat them as more of a threat because they have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and a lot of guys who are veterans. It's a veteran heavy team. But the thing I wrote and the thing that you were just talking about, like, who's their best five? So like it's Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Terrence Mann. I think Terrence Mann, not their third best player, but probably like the most malleable, to use the word, I guess, like useful player they have.
Yeah. Offensively still
who are the next two guys? Norman Powell?
Yeah.
I don't know. Rocco, and they go small, Batum?
Lots of limited guys, which looked good on paper next to their two stars, but again, hard to like shape them offensively when it's like, okay, they're just gonna do defensive schemes and mess you up in a 7-round series. But like even the Western Conference Finals, it's like we're just going to run posts for Marcus Morris because we have this matchup. Not the most efficient offense. And that's just what you have to deal with them if you're their coach.
A lot of half-court offense. And
he can't do much about it.
They ain't good at that. I was close to being boring, Kevin, and your editor brain would have freaked out if I had a three-way tie for first. But I really almost did that. I think New Orleans is legit.
Yeah.
It goes back to the conversations we had 6 weeks, 8 weeks into the year where it looked like they might win the West.
Bad matchups now.
But speaking of matchups, the stylistic thing where what Monty did is he did this. I can't get the noise that good, but that's
battering
my
ram.
Fist. And it's just, they both run the same stuff. And DeAndre said it himself. It's like, I know you're going there. You know I know you're going there, and we're going to make contact. And it's just this whole... it's not chess or checkers. It's just battering rams, like you said. And that can lead to some just anyone can win this game kind of situations. Like it can just kind of lead to that type of stuff. And if you look at their team, the step that Ingram has taken this year, Trey Murphy has had a huge like 3 months and he looks like he could be the fit. Like if Zion's out, that it looks like that's fine for them. Yeah. And part of what I wrote in here that you looked at was, if Zion's out, like, I don't know if that's such a huge deal for them because of how, one, good Murphy has been, and then two, Zion would turn into the pigeon on defense. Murphy came into the league known for his defense and would at least give you more length and someone else to throw on, Booker or Durant. But the example I used in here is CJ McCollum's going to have to guard someone, and he probably is going to guard Chris Paul. But then again, they could have Herb Jones still stay on Chris Paul, and then they could have Ingram on Durant and then Murphy on Booker. There's some stuff that they could do there. Continuity experience is the part where I mentioned, just I throw it out the window because of how the battering ram thing. I think that really, we watched those six games, man. I think that it really does matter. I would pick them to beat the Pelicans, but on a confidence scale, it would probably be the least confident I would feel out of these four teams. And maybe that was the better way to think about the exercise before doing it instead of just matchup based. But I don't know. That's how I feel, Matt. What have you made of the Warriors season? And again, you're shaking your head already. And in reference to how they match up as a threat to the Suns, Andrew Wiggins back around the team. He was there today. He was there yesterday. Got a big standing ovation in the crowd. Awesome.
Getting back in shape.
It was reported why he was away, which, why was that reported? Let the man...
Because there was a worse rumor out there. That's why.
Oh, is that why?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay. Then if that's the case and it was on their own volition, then that's okay. But if it wasn't on their own volition, screw that.
There was a worse rumor out there.
Okay.
We hope he's all good.
Definitely. Seems like he's good. Seems like he's going to be back next week. Be back for the playoffs.
Yeah, that matchup got weird after this trade, right?
Like, it did, but what do you think about the year that they've had and where they're at? Because this is not last year. Last year was a similar thing to this, but it kind of got solved in the last 6 weeks.
I hate when betting bros are just like, oh, I'm betting on this team, road, home, whatever. But like, you know, if you have an 82-game season and it says, oh, that team's definitely going to lose on the road just on what's happened, then like, I believe it. There's something weird with them going on. And I don't like talking about that kind of crap, but their road record is so bad. Yeah, I don't know. That bench hasn't come together enough.
9-30 on the road. Pistons are 7-32 on the road. The Pistons are 16-62. Over the last 2 months, the short sample I've been looking at, 2-12 on the road. Like, there hasn't been like, they went like 5-9 and kind of won some games. And no. Nothing. They got two more on the road here to go as well.
They've got issues because I think just overall, Klay has kind of gotten more in tune with things as the season has gone on. What are Jordan Poole's numbers? He's not the same like flamethrower. Oh, I'm just going to replace Klay Thompson as last year.
Aaron, last name unknown. No, it's Aaron Edwards. Aaron Edwards, but he just goes by Aaron on Twitter. Had a great tweet where Jordan Poole is either the best basketball player on the planet or just a dude. Yeah. Some version of that. And it's just nothing in between. You either get Michael Jordan or Scott Skiles.
Like, yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's who came to mind.
Don't disrespect Scott Skiles.
That was a horrible comp, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't. Like, if you even look at the Suns' bench, which got decimated by a trade, when you look at just who's where, they have a better bench than them. I don't know. How do you defend them? Basically, you put Okogie on Steph, right? And then you figure it out. Like, I'm not worried about what happens from there, right? Matchup-wise, if you're the Suns.
KD gets to go on Draymond and recover everywhere.
Yeah.
Free safety. Ed Reed. Go for it, my good sir.
Book
Ronnie Lott.
Take Klay.
Yep.
I'm not... Yeah, they don't really scare me from a matchup perspective at all.
Actually, Durant would take Wiggins. That's disrespect to Wiggins.
Yeah.
He's a really good offensive player at this point in his career, but you can hide Chris on Draymond. But they're going to attack Chris over and over again. That's going to be their game plan, but I'm shaking my head. Here's where I come back to them and why I think they're the biggest threat still. Defensive personnel. They score the best here. Andrew Wiggins.
He
hasn't been around, folks, but remember last year, he was their second best player on a team that won a championship. He was tremendous.
Some people would have said he might have been he was better than the two Boston wings. We'll say that.
You could go there, man. The Dallas series especially, he was just a chaos agent. Like, he was just, that poster dunk that he had, my goodness. It was like, there's the guy. We've been waiting.
That's him.
There he is. That's the number one overall pick right there. Draymond Green, if you haven't been keeping tabs.
Great podcast.
I don't know if he's going to make all defense this year. I've been keeping an eye on like that discussion specifically, but still, like, you can see him in games. He can still do the Draymond, like, I'm one of the best defenders that's ever played this game.
What game it was where you just said, you know, we weren't playing very well, so I had to do my thing and just basically said, I lifted everyone up. He says this on his podcast, and he's like, I lifted Steph up. And then once Steph was up, then he takes over because that's his job, but my job was to lift Steph. Excellent sound. Anyway,
he's the best. I'm so glad he has a podcast. Those two on Durant and Booker alone, and changing them too, and changing them on all three of those guys. Those two guys can defend in sequence, in stretches, I should say, not like the whole game, but you can use them on all three. Like, Wiggins was on Chris primarily. Draymond then would be on Chris sometimes. Who takes KD? Wiggins, I think, but maybe that's Draymond. Then they got that GP2 fella off the bench. That's a big addition. That's big in part of this. Is Kuminga ready for any of these assignments? No. But can he be thrown out there for 8 minutes to be annoying and just make sure Chris Paul has zero rest the entire game when he's on the floor and picks him up full court? Yes, he can do that. And he's done that in the meetings leading ahead.
That trade went through finally. Okay. Yeah.
I think GP2 is the type of guard defender that Booker just puts in the post and works him there anyway. But at least GP2 on Chris for sure. Like, when Chris is on the floor, he's going to be dealing with either Wiggins or Draymond, who can make all defense any year they want to, or Gary Payton, who, if he was a starter playing 30 minutes, he would make an all defense team, or Kuminga, who has the athletic tools to be all defense. Like, it's Chris is going to have that type of guy on him the whole series. So I have concerns there.
Yeah.
And then the other place that I have concerns. Game 4, 92-87 Suns. There's 4.5 minutes left. They're about to go up 3-1 and go back home against a team that's terrible on the road. Series is there. Like, it's there for the taking right there in those 4.5 minutes. Even with their struggles, I've zeroed out of my mind that the Warriors, with their cohesion, continuity, and how much they know each other. Remember, Wiggins was on that team last year. Looney's been there since 2018. Like, it's not just the three guys. Like, they have a lot of chemistry built up with those other guys. They are going to know exactly what they want to do. They are going to execute at a 10 out of 10 level. That is going to happen. The Suns have the better team, but can they match or even out execute a team like this when a series is on the line?
Yeah.
Because that's like, and there are going to be two or three moments if they play in a series, there's going to be two or three moments where it's going to be this 3 minute stretch in the fourth quarter. And most likely the Warriors are going to be on their P's and Q's tremendously. Can the Suns do that? I would have said yes without even thinking about it. This wouldn't even have been a discussion last year, 2 years ago. But the continuity, 10 games with KD, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know. I don't think that matters against the Lakers. I don't think that matters against Pelicans, the Clippers. But against the Warriors, championship pedigree, with a top three dynasty in the history of the sport, yeah, matters.
Even when you go back to the finals run against the Bucks, there was like so many moments where the execution was just not there, and it was more, and this is mostly offense, but it was more just Book, okay, I'm gonna try to win this because we just need something right now. And I feel like when you're in those moments where the walls are closing in against you in the playoffs, I'm going to be super curious how he operates with KD, because like KD can do that. KD has done that more, I think, just from experience in many more series than Book, where he's like had to.
What do you mean? I got this.
Yeah.
Like for those 4 minutes, execution doesn't matter because Kevin Durant's on the floor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like Book can do it, but I don't think Book knows when to do it is what I'm saying.
I think
he hasn't had to do that.
I think he does.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Durant is like top five all time in the league at doing that.
Right. And Kobe, sometimes you can be a good player. Like, yeah.
Kobe, LeBron, him, at least in the last 25 years, it's those three guys, leaps and bounds above everyone else.
Like, I don't, just when nothing's going right, dude who can take you over the top is Kevin Durant. Devin Booker, maybe.
For those who haven't seen Kevin Durant do it, Kobe game six, last playoff game against the Suns in Phoenix, that thing that he did. That's what Kevin Durant can do. He can do that. You know who is probably not going to be the matchup where I'm probably not going in round one?
Lakers?
New Orleans. Oh. Basketball Reference has them at a 6% chance to have the fifth seed after they lost last night. The Lakers, they don't know after that. Lakers 27%, Warriors 28%, Clippers 38%. The Clippers and the Warriors play tonight. If you're listening to this before then, at least check the score on that one, because the winner of that will, it'll basically come down to the Warriors and the winner of this game, essentially. Like, it feels like that's almost, that's a pretty good bet that will go from pretty much, New Orleans will need everything to fall in their favor now, and that's probably not going to happen, which is why the 6% is there. By the way, 22% chance they drop all the way to, or not, sorry, there's a, they've got them even like pre-playing, like 34% chance to fall to 9.
Oh.
Like, if they're pre-playoff odds right now, they actually have New Orleans at 9th being the most likely, which is interesting.
Lakers?
Yeah, who do you think it's going to be? This is just a random guess. Like, this, there's no way to like actually articulate.
You just told me the odds. Clippers, then.
I'll take what Clippers, the computer sir. Says. Yeah, thank you. I think it'll be Golden State. I think the basketball gods have decided.
Yeah.
This was what I wanted, is what the basketball gods should want. I know Suns fans listening are mad at me right now because they don't want to see the Warriors, but if we go through this Suns run, this Chris Paul, even the Devin Booker era, and we... Rephrase. If we go through the Steph Golden State era and we don't get the Suns matchup in the playoffs with these teams, like we're two straight years now, we don't get it this year, we don't get it next year, like we just don't get it, I'm going to be mad. I'm gonna be upset.
The moneymakers want LeBron, though. LeBron, KD, you can have it. We'll make up for the last 5 years.
Hope the kid doesn't have any like Sunday afternoon plans, if that's the case, because it'll just be matinee'd
yeah.
in that ABC Prime slot for at least two of those games, maybe three of those games, honestly. It'd be good for me for days off, because if they play the Warriors or the Lakers, they'll be taking a day or two between games for sure. Because remember that? The Dallas series, every other day they were playing, and we looked at the Warriors over there, and we were like, they haven't played yet? It's been 3 days. And so, well, they want to put them on TV. That's how it goes. But, hey, Suns fans, if you're hearing that, you're like, well, that's not fair. You have Kevin Durant now, so that might happen to your team.
Might.
All right, everyone. We'll be back next week when we will know Kellen Olsen's destination for a week, 2 weeks from now, and we will know who, more importantly, that you care about, who the Suns play.
Watch Andor on that flight. Watch Andor on that flight.
No, I don't want to. I told you I don't want to watch it on the flight, because then I'm watching it on a tiny little screen. I diluted. I'm saving it for like hotel view.
Oh, sorry.
Like when I've gone out and seen the world, seen the sights and all that, and I'm trying to relax in the hotel room before a long day of basketball. I'll get in with whatever his name is, the lead dude from Rogue One, who I already forgotten what his name is. Congratulations, Mr. Luna? Is that who it
Diego
is?
Diego Luna.
That's
right?
Who it is.
Yeah.
He's in The Last of Us. That's how I know who he is. All right. Bye, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.